For Europe's financial services industry today, it's quite like Y2K, a dramatic test of brand new systems. Software, sure, but really new rules for the running of financial markets there. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. For 7 years, European regulators have been trying to overhaul the rules that govern financial services and markets in Europe. Today's the day the new rules went into force. That was the plan, at least. Some countries and some industries weren't ready for the Markets and Financial Instruments Directive. Sorry about the acronym. They call it MiFID II. With a Roman numeral for the two. Futures markets in Europe and the London Metals Exchange today got a 2.5-year extension for this. In the thick of this is Justin Urquhart-Stewart, partner and co-founder at Seven Investment Management in London. Justin, morning to you.
Good morning.
Sounds like not everyone was ready for the great rollout of this new regulatory regime overnight.
No, they certainly weren't. Well, mind you, it's absolutely huge. But you have to bear in mind why this was actually being foisted on us in the first place. This is a penalty, of course, for past misdemeanors and crimes of some 10 years ago. So it's some very late medicine, which tastes awful, that we're being forced to swallow. And so not unsurprisingly, some of us are having trouble opening the bottle, others getting the spoon in our mouth, and the others actually just swallowing the dreadful stuff.
But there's an idea here that would bring a little bit more transparency, that prices within the financial services industry might be more rationally set. There's an idea here that's supposed to improve financial markets.
Oh, yes. I think quite rightly we're being told we must be much more open in how we're trading, recording the information, the timing of it. But some of it does go a little far in terms of having to record every single conversation you have, be it actually on the phone with a letter and, of course, emails and things like that. And the actual operation of all of that creates wonderful selection of logistics, and a whole new industry of compliance is growing up. But the concept is absolutely right, and particularly when it comes to those darker areas of trading, those dark pools, where, of course, nobody has any idea what's going on inside it, least of all, of course, the regulators.
Now, Seven Investment Management, your crew, they're living the dream here, trying to implement these rules. Did you buy some new software? Have you had to change your business model in any way?
We've certainly had to take on some extra people to try and run it all. We certainly also had to divert some of our systems teams to actually make sure we can just the basic recording of stuff. Now, of course, we record our telephone calls and things like that. But all those little notes you put on your iPad and things like that to make sure those are timed, recorded, and, of course, kept. It's all very well keeping things in a large bin somewhere, then trying to find it. And so it's just the sheer logistics of all of that. And, of course, we've been told that if you are happy with MiFID II, good heavens, you might even be able to look forward to MiFID III. But I'm pleased to say that's not going to happen for some time yet.
All right, Justin Urquhart-Stewart, partner, co-founder, Seven Investment Management. Always good to talk to you.
And to you. Thank you very much indeed.
And a number of companies have snapped to attention amid all this, selling new systems to record the phone calls of European financial folks, as now required. One of the tricks is to record the business calls, not the personal ones. U.S. firms still have some time to work out what to do about the transatlantic mismatch here. Watching the drama play out from Texas is Susan Schmidt, Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Morning, Susan.
Good morning.
You have to figure it out, too, if you have do any business overseas, and we all do business overseas.
That's exactly right. SEC has basically backed off and said, we're going to give you a pass for a year as we all figure this out. But what MiFID does, this is trying to separate and identify specifically the costs of trading and the costs of research for the trading and research services that are provided by brokerage firms.
And the system in the U.S. is, you know, if you do some brokerage services, you're on the so-called sell side, you might also offer, as an added benefit to your clients, some stock analysis. In Europe, it's going to be more distinct. You want some analysis, you pay some hard cash for that. If you want some brokerage, that's a different business.
And right now, we have those costs bundled together. And that research provides different value to different entities. So the value and therefore the related price point is not necessarily the same. It's going to be very confusing to try and separate that out, because also those trading costs, the brokerage services, that assistance in executing the trade is being valued in that bundle as well.
All right, different subject. The NASDAQ Composite Index, all those tech companies, went above 7,000 for the first time yesterday. Futures are up this morning here. People love their big tech companies, don't they, these days?
And they loved their big tech companies last year. So this is a trend that we're seeing. And we've seen that in the S&P, the Dow, So again, it points to the underlying strength of the market. Remember that we are coming up on annual earnings reports. And so in just a couple of weeks, we're going to start hearing from big companies talking about how their businesses have done. Those earnings, those positive results have been what has been supporting this market all the way along.
All right. We'll look for those. Susan Schmidt at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now to the business of healthcare. Many larger cities have that hospital, the public one, that everyone can turn to even if they're poor and even if they don't have insurance. Critics sometimes see these public hospitals as money pits, but supporters see them as integral to America's healthcare system. We have a Tennessee example from reporter Blake Farmer at WPLN in Nashville.
Ernest Anderson will have this quiet pump strapped to him for the next couple of months.
That is my foot bag.
It's sucking fluids off the wound left by his most recent toe amputation. Anderson's feet are in rough shape after decades of drug abuse and neglecting his type 1 diabetes. A few years ago, he hobbled into the emergency room of a private hospital. They're required to treat anyone who shows up.
You know, my foot was swollen and it was infected. It was stinking, and they said, well, it's infected, it's stinking. We're going to give you some antibiotics, and you go see your primary doctor, Cal.
But Anderson says he needed more attention and eventually got it at Nashville General Hospital, despite being uninsured at the time.
You might have had to wait a while, but you got care.
That's not to say things have been hunky-dory. Nashville General has required a larger taxpayer subsidy, surpassing $50 million a year, even though it's operating at a third of its capacity. Competition with private hospitals has only increased now that more people have insurance. So if Nashville General is only handling a few dozen patients a night, Mayor Megan Berry figures why not downsize to some outpatient clinics and let the private sector pick up the slack. She's proposed an indigent fund to pay for their bills elsewhere.
I think that it's great that in Nashville we have access to health care. So that continues.
But others are worried.
I think that people underestimate the responsibility of the hospital, the difficulty of providing services for a community that lacks resources.
Katina Beard runs a nonprofit clinic down the street from Nashville General and says no other hospital makes it as simple for those who cannot pay. To Reginald Coopwood, even contemplating closure shows a lack of understanding. He's a former CEO of Nashville General who now leads the public hospital in Memphis.
You know, it's easy to say we're going to stop funding public hospitals. It's not our responsibility.
But Coopwood says doing away with safety net facilities may have more serious consequences than anyone can predict. In Nashville, I'm Blake Farmer for Marketplace.
And you've seen the MoneyGram logo across the U.S., but the money transfer company will not become part of a Chinese company as planned. The Trump administration has blocked Ant Financial of China's bid to purchase MoneyGram. A U.S. merger review panel has national security concerns. Ant Financial's the baby of Jack Ma, founder of the big e-commerce company Alibaba. A year ago, Ma was wooing the Trump team by promising a million jobs in the U.S. MoneyGram stock is down about 10% right now. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.